Okay, Joe, we were talking about how you met Gertrude, and so you were telling me a little story about Father Ross and Dean Deacon and everything like that.
Well, you and I decided to do this thing anyway. That was the first. And
the group was what?
Catholic Senior Youth Club.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, I stand there, didn't know anyone. So, Father Stewart had told me that, Father, and I told him, if you go and go there to my table, you go down. I walked over there, and the first one I get to, I asked if you want to dance. He accepted. That's why we started knowing each other.
And that was Gertrude.
Right.
And she was working in San Antonio?
She was working at Santa Rosa Hospital. As a cook. I thought if you cooked for the 60, that you could also cook for me.
You were really looking for a cook, huh? Well, how long did you go with it?
6 months.
Mm-hmm. You weren't too slow at that, is that it? For waiting so long. How old were you when you married then?
34.
So, you and Gertrude had been married now, how long? What was your wedding date?
I think it's 32 years.
And your wedding date?
I know it's April 7th, but that's been 39. It's probably yet.
Okay, let's figure it out. About 49?
Next year.
Is that that right?
I guess so.
April what? April 7th?
Yeah. June 7th.
Oh, June 7th. Okay. June 7th. About 1839.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Gertrude's from a little town close to Cylinder. So she's also a German heritage, isn't she?
She has German heritage.
Okay, now, I know you've been a farmer, and you've raised horses, and you've had dairy. Something you've been doing all your life, I understand, or has it recently just been revived, is the making of the molasses. Have you always done that?
No, but our parents and grandparents made it, and I was the younger brother went with Dad to make molasses, and Dad would go south to the falls.
Wow.
The Esther family had a press, and the presses here were not operating anymore.
What do you mean the presses?
The presses that presses the pain. They kind of post up around here, and we were still about the last family to make molasses. And we had a ship that came loaded on a wagon, and Dad and two younger brothers left in the morning about 4 o'clock to the wagon to go 6 miles. That probably took an hour and a half. They passed it, and I had to stay home and milk the 2 cows. Then I went down later in the day. And I never learned too much about maintenance, but Mr. Hillman Mangle's grandfather had a press, and Hillman Mangle had it at his place in the farm. We were looking at it one day, and I said, let's fix this up and make it last. Well, we also got Dr. Shaw as a partner. We set it up and started making last. Neither one of us knew just too much how to make it, but we had Andrew Penn and some of the old timers to tell us about how to cook it. We were pretty lucky, and we made about 15 batches the next 2 years, and every time we learned how to make it better.
Is really the trick to it?
Well, first, You have to go out in the field and cut the cano, which is about 8 feet high.
Are we talking about the sugar cane?
Yes, sugar cane.
Is it any special variety of sugar
cane? Oh, there are several brands. It's orange, red top. And what we got was ribbon cane. It worked out pretty good. Some may be better, but we stayed with that. Then it has to be cut off. Feet have to be cut off and hauled to the forest. This is the old time forest, forest grown, horses go around and around. And we have to stick that cane through that forest, it pulls the shoes out and runs in the barrel.
And what color is this?
It's kind of the same color as the skull. Kind of a green, greenish looking. And after we get the pan holds about 90 to 100 gallons. We fill that pan. And we cook it with wood like the old timers did because there's no money involved. All we have to do is pour later to get the wood.
Mm-hmm.
The batch will be ready to take all, it could be any time between 2 and 4 hours. Cooking,
okay, you start out cooking just this juice that you have pressed
yes,
out.
That's
you
nothing
add
added,
nothing to
nothing
it.
Added and nothing, but just the juice.
Just the juice.
The cream juice. And when it starts bubbling, it has to boil all the time. And after it starts bubbling, and you take a spoon, dip it in there, and if it starts dripping real slow, it's about time to take out.
And it's like we toast the spoon?
Yes, toast the spoon.
Okay, does it change color as it's
cooking? It starts getting kind of brown.
Okay, what, and let me ask you this, what is the pan you're cooking in made of?
It's 8 feet long, 8 inches wide, and about 8 inches high, and
like a trough then?
Yeah, it's a square. Just like a box.
Uh-huh. Did you build it?
We had it built in San Antonio.
And what is the material that you
used? It's,
Is it a metal?
It's metal, yes. Yeah.
Like aluminum, or?
I think it's metal. It's made out of stainless steel.
Okay, that makes sense, when it wouldn't rust then.
That's right. And it expand the fire.
Wow.
Just plain metal tin
with
it will burn up.
Yeah. And so then you have this fire just built all along under
all underneath. It's kind of a pit.
Yeah.
And this pan rests on that rock pit.
Mm-hmm.
And continuously someone has to keep stirring it and keeping all steaming. It's in two of these that someone popped it.
Like a scum? Is it like
scum, yes, to pick that off.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with the scum then? Is it
we just throw it away. Some years ago, they used the whole big drum.
Oh, really?
Right.
Oh. Do you think it creates an alcohol?
It probably does, yes.
Okay, so it takes about 2 to 4 hours
right.
Then to cook it.
It depends on the wind conditions. If the wind strong wind, it blows over the ball and it cools it all. And it's a quiet day, probably because it's a lot faster.
But I imagine it's a lot hotter to cook it on a quiet day, too, and it's crazy
standard. Yes.
Okay, and do you have special utensils then that
right.
You work with?
Right.
What,
usually they take the old frying pans,
drill
out some holes in there, and the good juice goes through small holes. And that,
to skim off that scum.
Yeah, the scum will stay in the frying pan.
Uh-huh.
And clear it away.
Uh-huh. Okay, now where is this thing located?
Right now, it's, at our property, just, east of Cassiel on the Champlain.
Oh, up there close to the airfield then?
Yes.
Right.
About a mile from, the river.
So you're close to like where Ralph lives?
Yes, right.
Okay, you have it permanently set up there?
Yes.
Well, did you move Helma Mangold Smith over
yes,
there?
Yes, at first. And Helma does not even know as long as his grandfather. He does not know how old it is.
Oh.
It's just...
Have you had pictures taken of this and everything?
Yes.
Okay. Another thing, how often do you make this molasses now?
Well, see, we plant the cane about March first, if the weather permits, and it's ready to go about first part of July, just in the hottest season of the year.
So, another thing, is it important that you pick the cane at just the right time?
Yes, the cane, the seed has to be right, and several things, you know, that you have to look at before you start cutting it.
Uh-huh. In the old days, you say a lot of people made it, but then it tapered off.
Yeah.
Do you think it was because it was just too much work?
Too much work, and mostly it stopped during the war because there were no young people, and the old people
couldn't do it.
Just kind of faded away, but now we're the first ones to start it, and quite a few people found those old patches and set them up again.
Uh-huh. Well, now Sammy and Yvonne Shearhard and Jody and Rainy, where do they make their molasses?
They make it out of Sammy's place up there.
Oh, they have a press set up
yeah.
there also. Oh, I see. Do you know of any others besides you?
Well, the Walter Edwards set one up. And I think there's another one set up now, that's on it. And it's 15 gallons to the third.
And how do you bottle this, by the way?
There is a faucet on the fifth. And you lift this pan off when it's ready.
Uh-huh.
And open the faucet, and you have a 15 gallon. Aluminum jug that runs into. Then we load that and take that and take home, and it takes the next morning to cool off. And then we bottle it in gallon jars or quart jars, just whatever, means whatever is available.
Okay, as this is cooling then, Mr. Matthews, does it change color again?
It does change a little bit.
Well, how does it
make it a little darker?
It makes it
much more.
Does it also get a scum on it again as it's cooling?
It has a scum on it, but it's pure molasses.
It's
kind
the
of a bone. But that settles down by the next morning. You just have to get pure molasses again.
And so nothing is added to
the juice. No, it's just
do you think that the old timers quit making this because the commercial factories started producing molasses in a more factory environment? Do you think that's one of the reasons, maybe?
Well,
just like that, everything
well,
else
that molasses,
that was done
the real molasses, they have what you buy now in these stores is clear, and there's things that if you don't use, it's not just to do it to the same molasses.
Mm-hmm. But I guess it really is a lot of work for
it. It is. You could sell it for $20 a gallon, you wouldn't make any money. If you figure the labor down, it's close now.
What is the whole operation? How long does it take you from beginning to end?
Oh, time you cut it, dip it, and get it to the press. It depends how many people you have to help you. It takes about 4 men almost a day to get it to the press. Then another 8 to 10 hours the next day that you finish.
So you cook it and
yes.
you get the pies and...
The press that it takes for a bag with the horses going around about 2 hours.
Takes about 2 hours to bag
press it and,
to press it. And then
the
another...
The time you get it on the fire, probably another 7 minutes you get the fire to burn the boil. And
then another 3 to 4 hours cooking it.
Yeah.
And then you have to draw it off and take it home and cool it.
Yes.
So actually working on it about 3 days, huh?
Yes.
To finally get it bottled. Do you have it, and then do you boil your bottles and everything to stir all, to make it stir all on it, to let it to let it soften? Okay, is there anything else we've missed on this last? You need to cover it pretty good?
I think that's probably too good.
Do you have to use any certain type of wood now for the heat?
Well, any wood would be, but the old time it used to be soft as you would consider it just had a better flame. Oh. Any wood would be just get enough.
Cypress wood is sort of out of season now, even.
That's right.
The top is season. Okay, we'll change the subject completely now. I know that your family has always been involved in St. Louis Church. Your mother was an organist, and the Smith family was very active in the musical circles and drama. Your Uncle Alfred and your Aunt Kate and well, as you were growing up, do you remember this about your mother?
Yes. She played the organ in church for a few years. She studied music where the church is going to lie in Providence, where
Moy
is now. She's lived there.
Did she go to the boarding school?
Well,
she
went to the school where the boarders were, but she went home.
She was a day student at boarding school, okay. Did she and Kate go there then?
I don't know if Aunt Kate went there or not. You know, just did or not. But, Mrs. Jaggy, she went to school here. And my mother said she'd go home on weekends, if possible, on the train. Mm-hmm. And she'd get off of the coast, and someone would pick her up during Rocky. One night, they came in the train. The train stopped west of Castro, what they call the noon switch. She thought she was in the coast. It was dark already. Mm-hmm. She stepped off the train and looked around, and she saw it wasn't the cost, but the train left. She walked from there about 4 miles to the cost. Dark at night, she was just about 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
And at that time, on both sides, all of it was brush that she made it. I talked to her about it.
Yeah, Miss Jaggy told me that story when I interviewed her.
Mm-hmm.
She came from Vienna. She was a attorney.
Yes.
Okay, so your mother was the organist. Did you all sing at home? Did you all?
They wanted us to sing, but we boys couldn't sing.
Boys?
We didn't want to do something to sing, and kind of went through the first year. Sister Yudoka was here. And the music room was Dr. Shaw's kitchen. We went over there. The sisters, that was their living quarters. But where the kitchen is now, it took us about 20 of us in there, maybe more. And this is the goat I had a hearing aid. He's here pretty good. And the crowd in that room, about 100 degrees, and we were sweating, soaking wet. He turned around and looked at me and said, "You singing?" And he said, "Yes, you can. Your aunt and uncle could sing, your mother could sing, you sing." I never opened my mouth, and finally she gave up.
She gave up? You outlasted her? I didn't think you'd have that little, with the nuns. I thought you'd be scared of them.
Well, I was, but I couldn't sing.
You couldn't sing. Well, did anyone in your family inherit this musical ability?
Well, the girls sing, but the boys.
But none of them played piano, did they?
Our Kitty learned to play a net.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But none of those boys ever played music.
Now, your Uncle Alfred was also, he played in a band and my dad told me that his mother, Cecilia, you know, Ed's wife, she and Alfred would play in these plays. They would be the lead actors in the plays, that they liked to do that. Even after they were married, they liked to put on these entertainments, they called them.
Well, he believes in music, and even on the farm, they had the penthouse there. Somehow he knew the piano, an old organ just from there. He used to go to that farmhouse. He'd fly around and go play that organ for 20 minutes. Grandfather taught him one day.
You know, isn't that something, his musical ability?
You have to be out there working, not playing music during the day.
Evidently, that was how the old-timers treated music. It was not something you did unless you had everything else done.
It was real music then.
But Alfred probably would have gone far in the music world if he'd have gotten some.
Well, he was a bugler when he was in the service.
In World War One?
Yes.
Oh. Was he about the same age like Walter Holstein?
He could have been younger.
Walter went on to play with the trumpet in World War One. He became a really famous.
I can't answer that question. But I was too young to know old guys at that time.
Yeah. You do remember your Uncle Alfred, though.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And then Kate, did she play the organ?
No.
Oh,
she only her mother played. She the choir, instead of going to church, they practiced at the Smith House at Aunt Kate. They come down there to sing most of the time to practice with the piano.
And Aunt Kate lived right almost next door to you.
Yes, and I.
Did your family always live in the house that you, that was the whole house there?
Yes, next lot to us, the Smiths moved the building about 15 from pool hall there where Gene Trees this if they went out of business hotel.
Which, and, who was that owned that?
The Bates family.
Yeah. And that building was part of that Bates?
They had that for a pool room. They call that a pool room. And that was before my days. They moved that building, the lot that belonged to the Smiths next to our house. And 10 of us, wasn't room for all of us to sleep. So the boys slept in the building next to us.
So that was the boy's house.
Yes. And,
you know, that house now was moved up to the north part of town,
yes,
and someone's living in it.
Lumber's still there.
And Kitty and Floyd lived in that for many years, too. Isn't that something?
No, the six boys were together. We had our fights. We throw things at each other and came through the window. Dad came look through the window, all off the bus. Broken, a few more left. You fix it. We didn't know how to fix them, but north wind, the rain came in through the window that we made.
You didn't fix them? You never did fix them?
Well, he remodeled it then when Lord and Kitty got married to live in there. Well, remodeled the whole thing, that's where the window was fixed. But we lived through snowstorm there and the metal was fixed.
So there were 60 boys in there.
Yes.
Well, so you say you fought a lot, but y'all also got along pretty good, too, didn't
you? Oh, we got along pretty good. It's just friendly arguments.
Well, now, of all the boys there, you were a farmer. Francis got away from the farm.
Yes, after he was about 18, he went to work for the North Military School.
So now he's a contractor, isn't he?
Yes.
And
he's
also
retired.
Tommy and Albert and Raymond are all carpenters, aren't they?
Yes.
Do you think that this carpenter trade came from somewhere in the family?
Well, our ancestors, the Malthus, were builders.
Really?
Yes.
Well, how did Tommy and Raymond and Albert get interested in the carpentry? Is it just looking for a job?
Well, they were remodeling the mall right here at the time. Joe Jarvis was a contractor, and he was looking for ladies. Tommy was a young boy and wanted to work for him. He stayed there probably 25 years with him. And
so now,
Francis went to work at Sister Jane. He took Sister Jane in early in the morning to the market to buy vegetables and groceries, and he also did some work with Chancellor Wilcoxie. That was doing some stuff.
Okay, but your family, like I had said a while ago, has always been very close to the church. Did you feel this influence from your parents?
Yes, especially our mother. But when we went to school, we had to be there at 8 o'clock for mass. And if one of us was missing, just didn't tell me about it. Then, for a while, we had the catechism from school let out at 11:30, but if you got to a certain grade, we had to stay a half an hour catechism for about 2 years. And Sunday morning, we had to be at 10 o'clock mass. We had 2 masses that morning, but the children had to be at 10 o'clock mass, not the first mass.
Second.
Yeah. And if anyone was missing, we heard about it on the morning. And instructions, you know, catechism every morning about now.
What did you think about Sister Marcella?
She was strict, but she was a good teacher. She kept all the...
Did she understand Alsatian?
I think she spoke German. I never found out actually what she
spoke. Okay, which priest did you grow up with?
Father Heitman.
What did you think of Father Heitman?
He was a good man.
He was Alsatian.
Right.
Father Lampson? He was here the longest of any priest.
I think so.
Yeah, 25 years. Was your family close to him?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When you got away from home in World War II, how did you feel being Alsatian and getting to know a lot of other people? What did you think of your culture?
Well, I was proud of it. It paid off over in Europe. I could speak Alsatian and German. And I was the only one wearing 110 in this truck company, and I was the only one to speak that.
So you were a big...
I had to be the interpreter
big
for
shot
a company,
there for...
company commander, and if anyone German would come to the office over in Europe, they'd call me speak. So, doing that, I made all friends. On my records, we had to sign up, let them know what the stand that was, not put on their journey. When we got to France, they told me a man was coming, I had to go with him, the secret agent. I didn't know at the time, but, he was a high-ranking officer and 2 French officers. But they had to go somewhere and stuff. I took them. We parked in the forest in the shade trees. They started questioning me for about 6 hours. About about my family history, what I believed in, and everything. Well, it took me a while to catch on, but they received the days and checking on them. Even one, the French officer left, I didn't know where they went, but the one American that did most of talking, we slept together. He kept talking to me during the night about things.
Just trying to pull out of you everything.
See, I told him where my forefathers, I was like a king friend, and I never had no head trouble. Well, I didn't have a head trouble, but they wanted to be sure that I was all right. I wasn't going to do it for the chance.
Yeah. Actually, you should not have put German down on your application.
That's right.
You
but
should have put
we didn't know.
You didn't know.
Yes, because actually, most of the people that came from there, mostly German names anyway, and actually, we don't know for sure.
But these intelligence officers were screening you.
Yes.
So that you would be accepted to do this translation work, huh?
Right.
So you had an interesting army career then, didn't you?
Yes.
Were you ever in any danger? Any?
Yes. We moved into London in 110 men, and I was cooks. And the first morning, a general spoke to us, and we were at Eisenhower's headquarters, hold the flower for him. He said, thousands of soldiers would like to get the right arm to be where you are right now. You are just a thick bunch of men, and we want you to do the job. So that night, we parked in the middle of London and pulled our trucks in front of a building. About 11 o'clock, an English guard, there he was, came up to our room and said, get out. The bus bomb is coming over. Friend and I, he was from the England State, he said, oh, we're not going to get out. We're going to stay in bed. We waited about 10 minutes. So we said, you better get us out there anyway. We went down the cellar, the basement. In about 5 minutes, a bomb hit the roof. It was an incendiary bomb. It goes through the front of the roof and explodes. And it comes to our room. I guess the building had about 6 stories. It went to the middle of my buddy's bed, right where his stomach would have been. That thing exploded. The room went.
You wouldn't have survived.
No, neither one of them would have. So, we went back to our room, but there was no fire left. Straight things out, we left that time. So, we couldn't have any lights on, the Germans would spot their lights.
Yeah.
But that evening, while we moved in, a man walked up there, walked up the